Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 21st, 2016. A senior government official is killed during an attack on outskirts of Yambio town by a suspected vigilante group known as the Arrow Boys.
The Honorable Angelo Parakondo, he was shot dead with his driver together near the prison headquarters. Then, in the police headquarters, they shot one policeman and one prison warder.
And it looks like the SPLM-IO advanced team in Juba will be homeless on Friday.
The government said that they should move out by the 22nd, because according to their understanding, striker countries were not willing to continue to accommodate them, and the government has no money to continue to accommodate them.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A senior government official and 10 other people were killed by a gunman in Budue State. Police in Yambio say the Arrow Boys are responsible for the attacks. As Gift Friday reports for VOA from Juba, Arrow Boys, who call themselves the South Sudan National Liberation Movement, deny having any connection to the attack in Gangura Payam.
Budue's acting commissioner of police, Brigadier Badista Kumbo Samson, says fighting erupted when the Arrow Boys attacked police headquarters today in Yambio. He says the commissioner in the office of the governor was killed during the fighting.
The Honorable Angelo Parakondo, he was shot dead with his driver together near the prison headquarters. Then in the police headquarters, they shot one policeman and one prison warder. Then they threw a hand grenade into the house of Brigadier of the prison. Then two boys were there. One woman was injured.
Kumbo says Parakondo was shot dead while heading home. He says five Arrow Boys were killed during the fighting. Kumbo says he believes the Arrow Boys attacked the prison service and the police headquarters in order to steal firearms from authorities. He accuses Victor Wanga, the head of the Arrow Boys, also known as the South Sudan National Liberation Movement, of masterminding the attacks.
The Arrow Boys of Gangura, Umar from Wanga and Kabila, they came from their side at a briefing, come and attack the town. They entered into prison headquarters, then the police county headquarters. This is the place they're meaning to attack.
Kumbo says authorities have contained the situation in all corners of Yambio town. But other sources in Yambio who prefer to remain anonymous say heavy gunshots can still be heard on the outskirts of Yambio town around Oze River heading towards the base of the Arrow Boys. The SSNLM have accused government forces of attacking their base. Speaking in Arabic, SSNLM spokesman Joseph Kabila adamantly denies his group had any involvement with the Yambio attacks.
Government forces entered our base at dawn with gunfire in Gangura, Birisi Road. They entered with 7 land cruisers, started shooting from the bridge, reaching Birisi where our commander Victor Wanga is. I don't know. And we have signed ceasefire with the government. And what's happening in town may be those boys in the town. Maybe they are the ones, I don't know.
Kabila says his group has collaborated with government forces in the past to flush out criminals who were looting people in Yambio town. He says they have not responded on the attacks by the government forces in their base today and will continue to honor the ceasefire.
We shall not fight with the government because we signed a ceasefire, and we shall not break the ceasefire there where people from the UN are. I am requesting the government to find a solution to this problem today and should finish today. Those forces deployed to our base should withdraw.
Kabila says 3 of his Arrow Boys were wounded in the attacks at their base. He is calling on IGAD to come to Yambio to witness what he calls a breach of peace agreement signed by President Kiir.
I will say this General Salva Kiir, who is the president of South Sudan, when our letter reached his office, he accepted it and sent delegation, and we signed a ceasefire in front of the UN and the government delegations. And who has broken the ceasefire now? We are continuing with peace. We don't want to bring suffering to our citizens.
The South Sudan National Liberation Movement signed a preliminary peace deal with the state government officials late last year, which was mediated by local church faith officials. A final peace agreement was to be signed this month between the Ero Boys and the state government. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
A former senior commander in the Lord's Resistance Army, Dominic Ongwang, appeared before the International Criminal Court Thursday as judges at the Hague Court decide if there is evidence to try him for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity. If they do, this would be the first time an LRA leader faces international justice. Lisha Bryant reports for VOA from Paris.
Charge 1 to charge 10 concerns crimes in relation to the attack.
The list of charges against ex-LRA commander Dominic Ongwang is so long that presiding judge Kuno Tarfusser opted to summarize the 70 counts against him rather than having them read out. Asked whether he understood the charges, Ongwang, looking very focused and dressed in a sharp gray suit, responded positively, speaking in northern Uganda's Acholi dialect through an interpreter.
Well, from my point of view, whether the charges are read or not read, it's all going to be a waste of time. You may speak 5 words and only 2 issues are correct. You may speak 10 words and only 2 things are correct.
Ongwang faces charges of murder, rape, torture, forced marriage, and using child soldiers related to his alleged involvement in a string of LRA attacks against civilians in northern Uganda between 2002 and 2005.
The huts in which the inhabitants lived were thatched with grass.
Calling the defendant the tip of the spear of the rebel group, prosecutor Benjamin Gumpert showed Ugandan army footage in the aftermath of one LRA raid Ongwang was allegedly involved in, with bodies in makeshift graves and flies buzzing around. He said Ongwang played a key role in operations crucial for LRA's continued existence, abducting children to be used as sex slaves or child soldiers.
They were regularly required to participate not only in the murderous attacks on civilian camps, but in individual acts of torture and murder designed to convince recently abducted children that they were so steeped in blood that there could be no acceptance for them back in civilian society.
In some ways, that seems to be Ongwang's story. Now about 40, he was reportedly abducted as a child by the LRA in Uganda, and he rose the ranks. But prosecutor Gumpert argued that trauma does not absolve him of his alleged crimes, although it may factor into his sentencing if he's brought to trial and found guilty. The LRA has had a brutal record of massacring, mutilating, raping, and kidnapping tens of thousands of civilians in Uganda, South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Central African Republic in its 3-decade existence. The ICC also has an arrest warrant out for the group's fugitive head, Joseph Kony. Rights groups like Human Rights Watch are hailing the ICC hearing. Liz Evanson is senior counsel for HRW in Brussels.
This case against Dominic Ongwang is really the first of its kind, the first time that a court is getting to hear allegations of crimes committed by the Lord's Resistance Army, and where victims may have the opportunity to find out the truth of what happened.
The defense will have a chance to make its case later in the hearing, which runs until next week. Defense lawyers want the case thrown out. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
From Paris, we move to Juba, where the SPLM-IO says the government has asked members of the advance team in Juba to leave their hotels by tomorrow. The spokesman in the office of the SPLM-IO leader, Riek Machar, says the opposition is consulting with IGAD members and the international partners to resolve the dispute over who will pay the opposition's hotel bills. Philip Thonaleo has the story for VOA from Juba.
SPLM-IO spokesman James Gadet says the group's Adiban team in Juba has been informed that the accommodations in Juba hotels will come to an end tomorrow. Gadet says the SPLM-IO officials have no other place to go in Juba.
They've been accommodated by Troika countries, but the government said that they should move out by the 22nd, because according to their understanding, Troika countries were not willing to continue to accommodate them, and the government has no money to continue to accommodate them. It seemed they were reporting what they learned from Troika.
Troika is the United States, Norway, and Great Britain, three countries that have helped IGAD mediate the South Sudan peace agreement. Gadet says the SPLM-IO will consult with the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, the body monitoring implementation of the peace agreement, to resolve the matter. A statement issued today by the 12 countries says accommodation for 240 members of the SPLM-IO Adiban team will end tomorrow. The Troika statement says the purpose of its support was to secure the implementation of the agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan and the full operationalization of the various committees as prescribed by the agreement. It says the government of South Sudan and the SPLM-IO were informed in mid-December that this support ends on January 22nd. By that date, the two sides were to establish the transitional government of national unity. The Troika statement says the transitional government is the responsibility of the South Sudanese parties, including its financing. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makui did not respond to a request for comment on this story. Gadet says some members of the SPLM-IO were blocked from leaving Juba for Nairobi on Wednesday.
They didn't have pass permit or permission from the security office so that they could leave. I received such a report. It has been going on. But I think it's not a big deal. It can be handled by relevant authorities through the right channel.
Gadet says SPLM-IO leaders held a meeting in Pagak today to discuss the statement over the formation of the transitional government and the 28 new states. For VOA News, I'm Philip Thonaleo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan receives millions of dollars to fight HIV/AIDS. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's your favorite traditional game?
Hide and seek. I like it just because it reminds me of my past.
My favorite traditional game is called Hijla. It's kind of a drawing on the floor. It's kind of squares. And then you throw the stone at the first square. And the square which has the stone, you should skip. And it goes like that until it reaches the last one, which is like the eighth square. And then it just goes like that. And whenever you step outside the line of the square, you miss. And it's very, very, very nice and very funny.
My favorite traditional game is Owari. When you are playing, it involves a lot of thinking and strategic planning.
I like playing drafts a lot because it involves so much thinking.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Global Fund has approved $40 million US dollars to fight HIV/AIDS in South Sudan. South Sudan AIDS Commission officials say the funds will help create awareness and prevent the spread of HIV and provide much-needed medicine to people living with the disease. From Juba, Mungume Debs Rokarin files this report for VOA.
The United Nations Development Programme, or UNDP, is distributing the money to the South Sudan HIV and AIDS Commission and NGOs across the country. Habibu Dafala Awongo is Director General for Program Coordination at South Sudan's HIV and AIDS Commission. He says the money should last about 2 years. He says the money will be used to buy drugs for HIV-positive patients who used to go elsewhere for help.
We have had people crossing borders to neighboring countries like Uganda, like Kenya, to go and access better services. If you look at our treatment services in the country, they are not evenly distributed. Of course, we have areas where people travel for very many kilometers to access a health facility where they can access treatment.
The commission says 2.7% of South Sudan's estimated 12 million people are living with HIV. That means at least 190,000 people in the country are living with AIDS. But Aongo says other groups of people have higher rates of HIV.
We saw sex workers coming up, the military, the populations of humanitarian concern, or the mobile populations, the truck drivers, even border border riders.
Dafala calls these people HIV high-risk groups. He says part of the Global Fund money will be used to sensitize these high-risk groups about how to prevent the spread of HIV/AIDS. Aongo also says his commission will use the money to prevent mother-child transmission of HIV, a group he describes as critical.
It is now by policy that, of course, all pregnant women should be attending ANC services, antenatal care services. This is where, of course, they try to give you health education on how to take care of yourself and also monitor you consistently. But also, it is highly encouraged now also that all pregnant women, and this is one thing that is taking place in all facilities now, where all pregnant women who go for antenatal care services are tested for HIV.
Aongo says that a simple act like getting tested for HIV can help save the lives of millions of people. Evelyn Letio heads the local NGO National Empowerment of Positive Women United, which advocates for the rights of women living with AIDS. She says her organization, which had not received any funding since the conflict broke out, will now conduct seminars and radio talk shows about how to prevent the spread of HIV/AIDS.
We are going to bring the mothers to the treatment centers to be tested, and so that when they are found positive, they are put on treatment. We are going to take care of our husbands who are HIV positive and tell them to adhere to treatment. And that will be our ways of preventing HIV, new rates of infection in South Sudan.
She says more than 900 members of her organization will receive AIDS-fighting drugs from Global Fund money. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
While in Wau, parents are complaining about what they call abnormal increase in school tuition fees in the area's private schools this year. Some say with the current economic crisis, they don't have the money to pay for their children's education. School administrators say they need charge high fee to pay for teachers' salary and other items. Michael Atit has more on this story from Wau.
Pupils at Clement Mboro Primary School in Wau sing songs before studying in their summer camp classes. 30-year-old Marang Michael Mongong takes care of four school-aged siblings. After commodity prices shot up, he says he has been unable to pay for his siblings' school fees. Mongong says the decision by private school administrators to increase tuition fees might force him to pull out his brothers out of school this year.
To pay for all these things is not easy, because my salary now 1,100, and then if you see the school fees is 1,500, and also for in the house to for us to eat, it needs something like 1,700.
Hayat Tabani Yunama, a mother of six, says the decision to increase school fees was a surprise. She says working as a middle-class government employee does not allow her to pay her children's school fees and pay for other basic needs like food and health care.
فهسه حاليا انا عندي 6 اطفال وواحد امتحن السنه الماضيه.
One of my children go to the university and 3 other children are primary and secondary schools. Last year the fee were affordable, but this year it is too much and my salary is not enough to pay for all of them.
Pasquale Dotaki is the founder of Bright Future Primary School in Wau. He says his decision to increase school fees was made after consulting with the School Parents and Teachers Association, or PTA.
People want to educate their children at all cost. That is the fact. And no option, no shortcut. And we, the school, we are hope to go down, but we can't do it because payment of the teacher, it is difficult. We don't have any support apart from our parents who are the donor of the school.
Dr. Kiss says his school, like other schools in South Sudan, have seen their costs rise. So they must ask parents to pay higher tuition fees. But Charles Tombe Elia, head teacher of Mama Jojiku Primary School, says his school did not increase its tuition fees because they are aware of the hardship parents are facing given the current economic crisis.
For the last year, most of the parents were not even able to complete the tuition fee of their children. And because of that one, I even pity of that. Even if I increase, it will still affect because of the economic crisis. Most of the parents may even decide later on to take their children away from the school. And if I looked at that one, it's like even it will bring a loss to my side.
Juma Suleiman, an education officer at the State Ministry of Education, says education officials are aware of parents' complaints. Suleiman says education officials will hold an emergency meeting with all directors of private schools in Wau next week to address the issue. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
The Diocese of Kajukeji in the New Yei State on Tuesday graduated nearly 500 girls and teenage mothers who dropped out of school. As VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington, the church provides the teenage mothers with life and vocational skills through a training known as Bonga.
The 9 months training is led by Diocesan Bishop Anton Pogo. It's the 4th graduation ceremony in 4 years for the church, bringing the total number of graduates to just over 1,400. Areas covered in the life skill training include microfinance, nutrition, hygiene, health, and civil education. Vocational training covers catering, weaving, tailoring, hairdressing, and designing, among other areas. Bishop Pogo says the aim of the program is to empower girls so that they can earn a living and stay healthy.
In fact, we have the 3 issues of poverty, ignorance, and disease, and all 3 can actually be fought as we undertake education of girl child. Because an educated girl who later on becomes a mother is one who is not ignorant, one who can take care of their children well and give them a health education.
20-year-old Episcopal Church graduate Dina Modong dropped out of regular school in senior 4 because she could not afford her tuition fees. Before she completed her training, she started a business to practice her weaving skills she learned in the program. Modong told other school dropout girls not to give up on their education because she says education has no age limit.
I was able to set up my place under a mango tree and started training people here. And, you know, during the Christmas time, I was able really to have a certain amount of money that can help me to sustain my life. A quarter of it, I use it to help our family to buy some food items at home.
Modong says she gets 350 South Sudanese pounds per day, money she says she could not get before she enrolled in the training. Bishop Pogo says he believes education is the best way to help families achieve economic success. He says the Kajukeji Diocese launched an initiative to promote education because he says everyone needs an education.
I will encourage children or girls to remain in school and even boys to remain in school and complete their studies. But also parents, of course, the parents who look at girls as a commodity that needs to be married off because of the benefit that they might get. And so we also discourage that.
The next phase of the training is due to start next month. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. In Budwe State's Yambio town, at least 10 people, including a senior government official, were killed by gunmen. Yambio police say the Arrow Boys are responsible for the attacks. The South Sudan National Liberation Movement, known as the Arrow Boys, deny being behind that attack. Budwe's acting commissioner of police, Brigadier Batista Kumbo Sampson, says fighting erupted when the Arrow Boys attacked police headquarters today in Yambio. He says the commissioner in the office of the governor was killed during the fighting. Kumbo says five Arrow Boys were killed during the fighting as well. He believes the Arrow Boys attacked the prison services and police headquarters in order to steal firearms from authorities. A spokesman for the Arrow Boys insists that they have abided by the ceasefire signed with state officials earlier and did not commit the violence. The SPLM-IO says the government has asked members of their advance team in Juba to leave their hotels by tomorrow. A spokesman says the opposition is consulting with IGAD members and their international partners to resolve a dispute over who will pay for the opposition's hotel bills. SPLM-IO spokesman James Gaudet says the group's advance team in Juba was told that their accommodations in the capital will come to an end tomorrow. Gaudet says the SPLM-IO officials have no other place to go in Juba. A statement issued today by the U.S., one of the Troika countries helping to mediate the peace agreement, says accommodations for 240 members of the SPLM advance team will end tomorrow. And finally, the Global Fund has approved $40 million to fight HIV/AIDS in South Sudan. South Sudan AIDS and HIV Commission officials say the funds will help create awareness and prevent the spread of HIV, and it will provide much-needed medicine to people living with the disease. Health officials say many HIV-positive South Sudanese have been going to other countries to receive treatment because it's not available in South Sudan. They say that will now change with the money provided by the United Nations Development Program. The money will go to the South Sudan AIDS and HIV Commission and NGOs around the country. They will distribute the money for all the people suffering from the disease. At least 190,000 people are HIV positive in South Sudan, according to health officials. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that marks the end of our show for this Thursday. And we now leave you with the song Anna Sorry by Sultan Clinton.
This is my story, true story.
My love is seeking me, seeking the poor tabu.
We've been listening to Sultan Clinton with that song, Anna Sorry. I'm John Tanza in Washington. You have a peaceful night. Thanks for listening, and remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.